Hey, how's it going, Real Talk Nation? Welcome back to the show. You know the deal. We keep it real around here. Hey, I was just going back through some archives of some recordings I had. Came across this gem, The Clock is Ticking, with my great friend, true mentor, coach, just an all-around awesome human being, John Eunice. It's a story about grief and about overcoming. I tell you, you do not want to miss this one. I had an opportunity just recently, a couple weeks ago, to go down and support John Eunice down in Valdosta for a run that he does for a charity to raise money for a foundation that's in honor of his son who was lost in a tragic accident quite some years ago. But enough out of me. I really encourage you to listen to this episode again. Again, it was on a previous recording. We had a live event on Facebook, a lot of good interaction on it at that time back in 2020. Just wanted to share it with you again. Love y'all. Stay safe out there. You know the deal. Keep it real.
Like I said earlier, thank you for joining Real Talk with Caleb, John Eunice. Mr. Eunice, you're a legend in the CE career field, in the military, in Valdosta, pretty much everywhere you've been, John. You're a legend, known as a legend. And like we were talking shortly before we came on, before we went live, just you mean a lot to me and my family. Like I told you before, I really believe that God had our paths crossed for a reason. And selfishly, I think it was for my benefit. But I've learned a lot from you. And I just wanted to sit down with you and just have some real talk, as I call it on the podcast. We're streaming this one live on Facebook so other people can see it as well. But just to sit and chat, you know, you're a retired colonel in the United States Air Force, father, a husband, a coach, a mentor, a leader, an inspiring human being, is how I know you and how I like to talk about you. But if you don't mind, some of the people out listening or listening on the podcast in the future might not know exactly who you are. So if you don't mind, just kind of give us a brief introduction of who you are.
Well, thanks, Caleb. As you mentioned, I'm John Eunice, currently sitting as the Deputy Base Engineer at Moody Air Force Base. I've in Valdosta, Georgia. I've had the good fortune of being in that job now for, I guess, 12 years. It's hard to believe, actually 12 years this month. As far as my background, I grew up about 2 hours east of here, a little town called Folkston, Georgia. I grew up as a military brat. My dad retired. He's an aircraft maintainer. Retired as a tech sergeant in 1973. In fact, trying to do the math, some 40 plus years ago, he retired out of Peterson Air Force Base in Colorado Springs. And my first visit to the Air Force, well, we visited the Air Force Academy that Memorial Day weekend. Before we moved back to Georgia, and I was fortunate enough to get to go back to the academy 4 years later and graduate from there 4 years after that in 1981, and came on active duty May 27th, 1981, and tried to fly for a little bit. That didn't quite work out, but as you said, God had other plans for us. We were able to had a degree in civil engineering and was fortunate to first duty assignment was Moody Air Force Base. And that launched a 28-year career, and it was it was a great ride. Got to work with some amazing folks, worked for some great leaders, worked for some leaders that weren't so great. But I think, you know, we had the opportunity, I think you learn from both.
Yeah.
And those people come into your life as well, and they're there for a purpose. And sometimes we don't see that until, you know, that hindsight being 2020. We see their purpose there on the other side.
Yeah. You know, John, like I said before, thanks for just entertaining my request to sit and chat. And I know we'll get through to some things that are not comfortable. You know, you share whatever you're willing to share, because for those that are watching now, if they don't know you, or if they watch in the future and they listen to it in the future, John, you and your story, truly remarkable. And I'm not just saying that. I think as people listen to you, they'll understand that I'm right, hitting the nail right on the head when I say that. you know, a lot of people that I talk to, John, you span generations, you span demographics. It doesn't matter. You're a legit person. And we created this this Facebook page and podcast and, you know, website just to be able to highlight what I termed as legendary leaders, leaders that other leaders can learn from. And I know people are going to be blessed by you and your testimony and what you have to share. You know, I think anybody you talk to, I know anybody that I've talked to about you says you're, you know, not to get, you know, not trying to praise you as a man over a higher power, but you're what right looks like. And I know a lot of people agree with me when they hear that. And, you know, I'd like you, if you're okay with it, John, because I know a little bit about your story, but I know when I first met you at Moody, it's funny you say that about Moody, because they were like, yeah, this dude just, he's been here at Moody, he came here at Moody, he came back to command, now he's back as a deputy commander, but definitely tied to the community there. But, you know, I found that not everybody even in the organization knew your story. And I don't know if you remember that conversation we had in your office. I was like, Mr. Eunice, like, how do they not know, you know? And so I kind of, when I reached out to you, I know we broke it down in like four or five different major areas, but you know, John, to be honest with you, I think that the audience would just benefit from however you want to share it. You know, so if you just want to talk about your story, I got my pen and paper in hand. There's some things that I know sometimes when we're telling our story, we might leave out a part inadvertently. But I got some stuff written down that I want the audience to definitely be able to hear from you. So if you don't mind, John, if you'd be so kind, just to walk us through your life, man. You got so much to share.
Well, you know, and we don't go through this thing life we call life alone. You know, I was blessed, great solid family. I'm the oldest of four brothers. We're stepping stones, all just about a year apart. And I said, great, you know, very solid mom and dad. They grounded us. We were, you know, heard ours is it's a faith story. We walked this road through faith. And, you know, after graduating, I was fortunate enough to meet my wife, Tammy. She's been just a bedrock beside me now for since 1983. So it'll be 37 years next month.
Awesome.
But, you know, we're blessed with three amazing children. Our oldest son, John, is a lawyer in Washington, D.C., works for Senator David Perdue. Our daughter, Lindsay, is married to Joe Quinn. They have our only grandchild right now, Betty, who's will be two next month, and our second grandchild. She'll have our second grandchild in July, and then James is our, as we refer to him, we'll talk later about him. James is our forever 17-year-old. But you know, Tammy and I got married. I was still lieutenant. Our lad now. When we printed wedding invitations, Tammy's mom was hesitant to put on there the first lieutenant because I was still a second lieutenant. She wasn't certain I would make first lieutenant. So, I did. And we moved forward. I had a variety of moves. You know, we was fortunate enough to do some different things, a couple of overseas tours, some remotes, remote to Korea. Back out of the career field for a while, teaching ROTC, then back into the career field at a non-traditional location like Hanscom Air Force Base, and then to staff, and then was fortunate enough to be able to command at Anderson Air Force Base in Guam. And, you know, Tammy, we had the list of 20-some-odd bases to choose from, and Tammy looked at the list. She said, well, I don't want to go here, I don't want to go here, but she said, I absolutely cannot go to Guam. And so she says, now it's, you know, showing that God has a sense of humor, and was a great experience, some great people to work with. And, you know, as we talk, coming out of Guam, again, heading back here to Moody to command for a second time, and just before we left, our oldest son, John, had some medical issues and, you know, lost some strength in his left hand, and came back, had some surgery, took him up to Augusta, Georgia, Medical College of Georgia, to a pediatric neurologist. And, you know, just after taking command, we drove up here in a rainstorm, drove back in the remnants of a tropical storm. They did some tests on him, and we came back, and, you know, the doctor walks into the room and he just says things you never want to hear. You know, I don't know how to tell you this, but I think he has ALS, or Lou Gehrig's disease. And, you know, we were crushed. We didn't know what to do. I drove back, longest 4 or 5 hour trip we've ever made, coming back from Augusta. A lot of prayers went up. And, you know, about 4 years later, John came back. That diagnosis was cleared, has some permanent damage to his left elbow. And we're thinking there, you know, after that, that, hey, you know, this is our test as parents. You know, God's put us on this, and, you know, this is good. We've survived this challenge.
Yeah.
And so that was great news for us, great news for John, obviously. And, you know, as we went back, we left Moody. I went from there, came up to Robbins Air Force Base, worked with Reserve Command, and, you know, had some challenges there. I had, you know, we say we had, we learned from both good leaders and bad leaders. I had some great leaders at Moody. I had some that may not have been that great, but had some great leaders at Robbins. And came time for promotion to Colonel. Was excited about that. It had some good reports, but it didn't happen that year. And it was crushed, and got that news the same day that I found out my dad had had pancreatic cancer. And a very crushing day. I was by myself. I had, was actually living with a classmate in Robbins, at Warner Robbins, Tammy Anastas, so our oldest could finish school. And it was a very low day.
Yeah.
But you know, God sustained us through it all, and came through, and wound up getting picked up the next year above the zone, which I think was, you know, we pressed forward, did what we needed to do, and had some great bosses there at Robbins. And so that opened the door for some opportunities. Took a another job in the Middle East to Al-Udeed, helped build up a lot of what is now Al-Udeed back back for those of us old enough to remember the days of Camp Andy. We brought it from that. Yeah. And so spent a year over there, and then Spielberg at Scott Air Force Base at AMC. And then from there, Tim Byers hired me to go to Shaw Air Force Base at Sumter, South Carolina, to be the AFSAN A7. And, you know, that was just a culmination. Really loved it there. Had some great opportunities. We left our oldest two children, John and Lindsay, in college when we left Valdosta in 2005 to move to Scott Air Force Base, and then back over to Sumter. And it came time in 2008, we had a job offer, had the opportunity to move back to Valdosta. Had not planned on retiring, you know, but got a call and said, hey, would you consider retiring, coming to Moody? And so we thought about it, prayed about it, told my boss, you know, his comment, his word was, you know, John, just remember, it's good to be king. And it was, so we thought about it long and hard, talked with, at that time, I had the good fortune of working with Tim Green, and talked with Tim a fair amount about this, and got some, you know, some very sound, solid advice from Tim. Tammy and I talked about it at length, and James at the time, as I said, our oldest two were in college at the time. James at the time was just finishing his ninth grade year, and in one of those conversations, Tammy turned to me, she said, you know, I think we need to get out. She said, we only have 3 years left with James, and obviously talking about his going to college. So we made the decision in 2008 to retire from the Air Force after some 27 years and change, and made the move back to Valdosta. Tammy and James joined me in July after I moved down in May to start work, and we've been here ever since, and had the opportunity to work with some great commanders, some great chiefs, and just you know, instill what little bit of knowledge and wisdom I have on those who've come, who have come through here.
Well, I'll tell you that you've definitely, you've done more than share a little bit of wisdom, John. So don't sell yourself short. But just there's a couple of things I wanted to point out, you know, as you move forward in this. And so for our audience members that are on here, if the video freezes, sometimes the internet connection is not that great, drop your comments anyway. And I will post a YouTube video later, because I know John's story, it's about to get hard, but it's part of, you know, highlighting, you know, how, you know, that country song is like, how did it hit you, you know, and how do you get back up and how do you keep pushing on? But there was a couple of things you talked about. Betty, for one, she's a little diva. I tell you, I see her on Facebook, and you know, she knows when the camera's on her, and she knows when to smile. And y'all gonna have your hands full with her. And then I don't know what she's gonna do in July. I don't know how she's gonna handle that.
She is pure sunshine.
Yeah,
and that's awesome. You know, it's like you know, she's been a part of our lives forever.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how she's going to handle it in July, man. I don't know. There's only so much you and Tammy can, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know how she's going to split that not being a center of attention anymore.
Well, I think she'll be great. We're excited. We're hoping to get to go up and see her here in a couple of weeks, and then to have Lindsay's when the baby's born. But we're excited about that. Excited, obviously, about getting to see her. And like she has brought unbelievable joy and happiness.
Oh, absolutely. I can imagine. I can see it in y'all's faces and her face as well. And something else I wanted to highlight is, as you highlighted going through your story, not necessarily intentionally, it's just when you listen to your story, when you really listen to it, and it's not that uncommon for us in the military or anywhere else in life to have something we got planned and, you know, it didn't work out. But the way your story unfolds, I tell you, John, it's got there's a lot of that. I know that, you know, somebody wants to look at, you know, patience, having patience, you know, and understanding what grace and mercy is, looking at you, right? And there's some things you talked about, you know, when you found out you didn't make colonel and you found out about your dad's health condition at the same day, the same time frame. You're not closely united with your family, immediate family at the time. And, you know, a lot of our service members go through, you know, similar things, right? And that's why we have such a problem with suicide. One of the reasons, right, was veteran suicide and with, you know, suicides in the military. It's just, you know, you get hit from all angles. And speaking of getting hit from all angles, I'd just like you to go ahead and continue on with your story about, you know, those unexpected life events that drive you to the ground. And then how do you get back up and how do you move on?
Well, you know, talking with Tam the other day, I said, you know, sometimes you just had to put your head down and move forward. You put in your kind of questions, a little bit of outlines about some quotes, favorite quotes along the way, you know. Yeah. And I've heard many of them. You know, I go back, I like to read about, you know, military leaders, you know, Douglas MacArthur, moral courage, the courage of one's convictions, courage to see things through. You know, that's, you know, his quote about duty, honor, country. Colin Powell, you know, perpetual optimism is a force multiplier. And I like to, yeah, I think you do have to be optimistic, and life is hard. You know, it's I hope people understand that. You know, there are going to be hard chapters in life. And Tammy, as we share a story, you know, Tammy says, you know, we don't get to control what happens to us.
Yeah.
But we do get to control how we react to it and how we move forward. You know, and a quote I've always shared, it comes from Horace Greeley back from the mid-1860s, who wrote, "Fame is a vapor, popularity is an accident, and money takes wings." Mm. The only thing that endures is character. And so, you know, as we talk about that, we try to be a person of character, a person of integrity. When I get the opportunity to talk with incoming commanders, I use a quote from Albert Schweitzer, who says, "Example is not the main thing in influencing others; it's the only thing." So it's, you know, we want to set a good example, and in doing that, I think it, you do that in how you respond, both in good times and in bad. You know, that's, you know, because people say you see as much from people, and when they're successful, and how they react as you do when they have setbacks and challenges. And you talk about the resiliency factor. There are, you know, as we talked about, you know, the story with John, you know, when we got the diagnosis about ALS, and you know, a lot of prayers went up for that, and we thought, hey, we've passed this parent milestone, we've done this, and then the double hit with my dad and the promotion piece. But you know, you move forward, and you pick yourself up and move forward. And as I said, and we moved back to Valdosta here, and you know, we were all excited. James, when we came back, he'd been homeschooled for 6 years, and made a decision at that point. He wanted to go back to school. He said, "Hey, I want to go to school. I want to go to Valdosta High School." Mom went to Valdosta High School. Lindsay went to Valdosta High School. John went to Valdosta High School. I want to be a Wildcat, yeah. You know. So, and he wanted to do that. He wanted to be a two-sport athlete. So he wanted to play, you know, play football, play baseball for the Wildcats. And so he did. You know, and we got settled in here. We, you know, love being back in Valdosta. Tammy's parents are here, and John was doing great things. He had he was here locally. Lindsay had just started, and James, a senior year, John started law school at the University of Georgia, so we got him settled up there. Lindsay had just started a job in Washington, D.C., working with a company up there, and we had dropped her off in May. And James got ready to start his senior year of high school. And in April of that year, he wrote, he lost a classmate, lost a schoolmate. And he wrote words that have become so familiar to us, called "The Clock is Ticking." And he wrote those words that began, "Take time to love someone today, tomorrow, for the rest of your life." And it closes with the words, "If this just touches one person, I've done my job. So don't stall. Judgment is a heartbeat away." So those 219 words, we got to know so very, very well. But James, as I said, we were 3 years into our time back at Moody, senior year of football, great football season. They had done very well in the playoffs. They made it to the quarterfinals. Getting ready for baseball season, and James was our outdoorsman, and loved anything being outside, hunting, fishing, you name it. He just liked being outside. So we had had a great Christmas. John and Lindsay had both come home. We put Lindsay on the plane to go back to D.C. on December 30th, 2010, took some pictures at the airport, and then John went back to law school, and James started the second semester of his senior year. And so that second weekend, once he started back his second semester, we had the opportunity. He had gone duck hunting numerous times over that Christmas break, and the season was coming to an end, and he wanted to go as many times as he could before the season ended. So that Saturday, that weekend was leading into Martin Luther King weekend. And he was going, going with his good friend that morning. He plans to go duck hunting three times that weekend, Saturday morning, Sunday morning before church, and again, Monday morning before baseball practice. So we, he came in. I left the dog out Saturday morning. It was a great weekend, Friday night. We say that God cleared James's calendar. All of his friends were involved doing something else. So he was stuck at home, senior in high school, stuck at home on a Friday night with mom and dad. So it was great. You know, we grilled steaks, talked a little bit about what I had done. It was interesting. We had a National Geographic or something on. They were showing pictures from early days of OEF, Enduring Freedom, showed, you know, K2 and some other places I had been, and we talked a little bit about that. And, yeah. So you had a great visit, you know, watched the movie Anchorman, you know. So, had a great night.
Yeah. And,
so he got up I got up the next morning, left the dog out, and checked on him. He was still sleeping. So I went back and laid down for a little bit, but a little bit later he came into our bedroom and to get some money from shotgun shells to go duck hunting. And we told him to see him at lunchtime. And, perfectly healthy 17-year-old young man. He'd already been accepted to the University of Georgia, had great plans to go and, be a Bulldog and go on and do great things. There's the song out with the lyrics, we're all one phone call away from our knees. Yeah. And at lunchtime, Tammy was out shopping with her mom, and she got that phone call. The young man that James was hunting with, his mom called Tammy and said, "You need to come to Ocean Pond. James is missing." And and that was the word, missing. So she got a hold of me. I was on the other side of town. We got up together and drove down together, hit the entrance of Ocean Pond. The deputy sheriff was there and told them who we were. They let us in, and we drove down that dirt road. And we got there. The game warden was there. EMTs were there. Deputy sheriffs were there. And we saw, we fully expected James to come up walking out of the bank. He said, "You guys are overreacting again." Yeah. We got there, and as we walked up, the young man James was hunting with was wrapped up in a blanket, shivering cold. He had been in the water. And our neighbor from three doors down had gone down there. And he said, "John, I was out hunting, deer hunting that morning. And don't know why," he said, "but I felt like I just need to go down and check on my boat at Ocean Pond." And so I came down here, and he's the one who actually helped rescue the young man that James was with. But as we came up, he looked at us, he said, "John, are these your people?" And I said, "Dean, it's James." And he said, "Oh God, not James." And at that point, he pointed to a boat spinning, an empty boat spinning. And the way they had worked it was that one young man would be in the duck blind, and the other would be in the duck in the boat, and they would flush the ducks back to the other one to shoot. And we're not sure what happened. But that event set off what became a 17-day search. The best we can figure out is that James, at some point, we think as it was beginning to warm up, that he took his mask off, because the mask was found at the bottom of the boat on the first day of the search. His knit cap blew off in the water, and we think he reached for the cap, and when that happened, the seat broke, and he was wearing waders, and it was enough to put him off balance and flip him into the water. It was an atypical South Georgia winter. It was 38 degree water temperature. And with that, you get about three to five, seven minutes in there. And that kicked off what became a 17-day search. During those 17 days, we learned, so much about a young man that we knew so very well, but how he lived and how he impacted the lives of others. You use those words, "The clock is ticking, take time to love someone." Well, that's what he did. And that's how he impacted people. His story, his classmates would ask him, "What do you want to do after graduation?" And his response was always the same. He said, "All I want to do is make a difference in the lives of other people." And, I think as leaders, that's what we want to do. And I look at how he modeled that as a young 17-year-old. But even before that age, he was doing that. He was influencing the lives of others, reaching out, helping, comforting, advising. That search began, as people talked to Tammy, you said, "Well, how did you survive it, being a 17-day search?" And Tammy's like, "Well, I don't think we could have handled this story outcome any less days." But that night, they brought PJs from the 38th Rescue Squadron and helicopters from the 41st. Many of those young men and women had just returned from Afghanistan, but they came in, they killed the lights at Ocean Pond, and they started searching, and that began that 24/7 search for 17 days. And James, while we were down there, we saw, the outpouring of love as 5,000 meals were served, as 35 agencies from three different states all came down to help look for a young man they didn't know, but came to know so well because of how he lived and the stories that were told about him. So James was, you know, through those days, you know, we learned so much and how James lived. You know, we found so many things he had written on Facebook. And, you know, one that he wrote that we were watching stuff on TV yesterday and reminded us of this quote. He said, "I'm not going back to it, I swear. I owe it to my God, I owe it all to him. Me starring in my own little life movie is so insignificant compared to having a role in God's epic film. At the end of mine, there will be at the end, but in God's, there is no end." And so we look at that, we look at those words and how they've played out now. You know, James was recovered on the morning of January 31st, 2011. by PJs from Moody and a dog team from Nassau County, Florida. And, you know, we thought the story was over. And we use, you know, but those two words, but God, and because of what's been done for us, how James lived, we've been able to continue to move forward with his story. You know, because of how he lived, we have a story. You know, we talked about the University of Georgia, you know, how James had two classmates, Malcolm Mitchell and Jay Rome, who were recruited to the University of Georgia, and the coach there at the time, Coach Rick, you know, James' service sent a jersey down to his service because James was hoping to walk onto the football team. And sent a handwritten letter, said, you know, this is the jersey I'm sure James would have earned. And Jay and Malcolm walked up with a box, and they pulled a red University of Georgia jersey out with James's name on it. By the way, this is the jersey I'm sure James would have earned. By the way, he made the team. And, you know, so we moved forward from that. Stories were written about James and how he lived about, you know, and for us, you know, we talk about people doing things for you who you can never pay back. And I think, too, you know, in a leadership role and a resiliency role, we do things for people we don't ever expect anything in return. But we do things because it's the right thing to do. And we want to set that example of doing the right thing at the right time and reaching out to people and helping. And, you know, as you talked about resiliency, because that's what so many people did for us. You know, during a 17-day search, and now, you know, January will be 10 years, and people still reach out to us. You know, Tammy watched a TED Talk from a young lady who lost her husband when they were newly, you know, hadn't been married too many years, and they still had two children, and she said, you know, I don't move on with my life, I move forward with my life. She said her husband was still part of her life, former husband was still part of her life, and her current husband accepted that. And James is still a part of our life because we move forward with his story. Yeah. And his, you know, Drew Jabera, who wrote a book about the Wildcat football team called Must Win. And, you know, I think the third anniversary of losing James, he sent something to us. He said on Facebook, you see John, James's parents, and they talk about James as if he's in the next room, which if you're a person of faith, he almost is. And so we continue to move forward with James' story. And so we made a decision, you know, during that 17-day process, because such an event like this can tear families apart. Yeah. So on day three or four, going down that dirt road back to the clubhouse at Ocean Pond, Tammy turned to me. She said, "Okay, we need to nail it down now." She said, "We both made the decision. He can go duck hunting." So we didn't turn it into a blame game. It was a united front. And we, you know, made that decision, made that commitment to walk through this journey together. And so, and we've used examples we learned through those 17 days to continue to move forward. You know, we want, as we go forward with James' story, we say we do two things. You know, we seek to honor God and remember James. And so we'll share those tidbits, those pieces, as we move forward, and we made it a point to kind of carry James's mission forward. He said, all I want to do is make a difference in the lives of other people. So we've kind of picked that up on our shoulders, and we've moved forward with that.
You know, I tell you, John, that I know it's difficult to go through and relive this. Thank you doesn't cut it, but thank you for telling the story. Like I said, I know I've said it a couple of times, but I know people are going to be blessed by it because of how you have moved forward. You didn't move on. I like how you put that, not only how you put it, but how you live your life. And you and Tammy are such a force to be reckoned with in a positive way. There's a couple of things I wrote down. And John, I know me and you have sat in your office and talked about this, and there are still things that I'm jotting down. It's just how he continues, he being James, continues to help others, right? And I know it's through you and the way you and Tammy handled it. I think you hit on some key things. One of them, in his James's words, take time to love someone. You know, my sister, I can't imagine. I can't imagine what it's like as a father to lose a son or lose a child. So I can't even pretend I know how you feel or how Tammy feels. I can respect it. I can respect how you've progressed and how you've moved through forward on in it, if you will. But I don't know what that pain's like. I've lost close friends. I've lost nephews, but I haven't lost a child. So I can't begin to imagine. But having said that, when I met you, I knew there was something different about you, right? And I think that we all come across people in our lives where we look at someone, we're like, there's just something different about them. You can say it's your faith. You can say it's, how you carry yourself, whatever you want to term it as. But the love, what I saw or what I continue to see out of you and Tammy is love demonstrated, right? And there's people talk about love. There's people that talk about patience. There's people that talk about resilience. There's people that talk about all these things. But seeing you guys walk it out every day is definitely inspiring. Everything happens for a reason. I wrote that down because I hear it in your voice, right? So I think, there's some people out there that may have gone through exactly what you and Tammy have gone through, you and the whole Eunice family have gone through. And maybe there's a lot like me that can kind of understand it a little bit just based on pain we've experienced in life, but not wholly, know what that means. So when you say, put your head down and keep on. So I know you attribute how you've moved through it with a close family unit and your faith. What would your advice be to someone that's going through that? Maybe doesn't have the same faith that you have, but what would your advice be for somebody that's going through something that's difficult, or maybe it's not even as difficult, might not be viewed as difficult, but we can never tell somebody how they feel, right? It doesn't matter whether it's a situation X, situation Y, or situation Z, and we can't tell people how they feel because we can't control that and we don't understand feelings 100%. So what would you tell someone that's going through something like this, what would your advice be?
Well, and we all suffer differently. We all hurt differently. We have, people have come into our lives because of this, who have also lost, through loss. But again, there's joy in that relationship. But I think people need to understand that there's always somebody out there, and that there is always someone who cares. And I hope, whether you're shop lead at NCIC, flight chief command, that you're reaching out to your folks so they do know you care. And, when we have that, those hard chapters, that there's somebody you can reach out to, whether it's your coworker, your boss, a chaplain, somebody. There's somebody in a clinic and mental health, wherever it might be, that can help you through that. And know too where to look for the sound, solid advice. Mm. And I think too is you want to be discerning in who you listen to, and what you hear them say. Because it's we can be bitter or we can be better.
Yeah.
And I think, as we go forward, we want to take what we've learned, as hard as it may be, and use it to help others. And as Tammy shared, she said, everything I learned, you know, I learned it's for me, but it's not just for me. And so where we can move forward and help other people, that's important. And oftentimes, too, when you are hurting, helping someone else is a way for you to heal as well. But you know, for those of you feeling like you're alone, you know, you're not. There are people out there who are hurting. There are people out there who want to help you. We had, you know, we lost a student when I taught ROTC, lost a student years ago, not through death, but through a very significant event, traumatic event. And, you know, we reached out to her, and it was very challenging. You know, we got her through things, but it was a significant event for her. And so there are people out there who care, people who want to talk to you, people who care about you and want to help you through whatever that situation might be.
You know, John, something you said, I see Eric on Facebook had commented on it, and they definitely approve of the comment, but you can be bitter or you can be better. So I don't know if you remember or not, but I walked into your office. I was 2-3 days there on ground, and I could instantly tell by just, you know, one a picture similar to what's on your wall behind you of James, but I could tell that that something had happened, right? And you know, I asked you to share a little bit, and or just ask you. I think you saw it on my face, and you were kind enough to say, "Okay, this youngin has questions. I should probably fill him in a little bit." And when you said bitter or better, that describes you and Tammy 100%. You know, my sister's that way as well. In the regards of, you see some people that lose someone in their family, and they blame. And I think it was critical that for you and Tammy's relationship, you know, because you're right, people get pulled apart. But when y'all are saying, hey, that's not going to be a blame game. But even outside of that, right, John, even outside of personal relationships, people can still blame. They blame a higher power. They blame the God they pray to, or a myriad of things, right? And they just become bitter, hateful people. And it's not like I'm judging, right? I'm not in a position to judge anyone. I'm not in a position to say whether you should or shouldn't be that way. But y'all aren't. And the amount of people that you're able to influence based on you being better and not bitter is a testimony and a testament to how you've handled it and how you've moved forward in your life. And I like how you said this was a rough chapter, right? You're going to go through rough chapters in life. And if you think about it, as James talked about in a film or in a book, right, about, yep. You know, I think it's amazing how you can clearly see that y'all moved forward, not moved on. As you talk about the next chapter, about you and Tammy sharing, and I don't want to steal your thunder, but you got scholarships that y'all go through and give away to people, you know, deserving athletes, deserving good human beings, you know. And James is in that, right? So it's kind of like when you're reading a book, you don't go to, you know, from chapter 3, you read about James, and then chapter 4 and 5 and 6, you're like, where did James go? What happened? He's in every one of the chapters as y'all go forward in life. So, you know, I thank you so much for sharing the story and sharing, you know, hey, this is how I moved through it. This is how me and Tammy moved through it. This is how the Eunice family moved through it. And I know there's people that will listen and say, maybe, you know, because I know me and you are not naive enough to think that everybody, you know, chooses the same faith background that we choose to believe in, right? But there's, like you said, there are people out there that do care, you know, and not to say that, oh, I have to believe a certain way, or I have to believe like John believes, or like Caleb believes. And that's not what we're saying at all. We're here for you, right? We have gone through some things. You have definitely gone through a lot in your life. And I know you have helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people with their walks of dealing with grief. But when we talk about moving forward in a chapter, I know you and Tammy, and again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but y'all have, you know, she goes around and talks to middle schoolers, talks to junior high schoolers, y'all both do. What is your message? So can you tell us about the chapter that James has propelled y'all into now, and what that walk is like?
Yeah, and you know, we miss James every day. But we move forward with that message. And I think as we share his story, we talk about legacy and, you know, the life and legacy. What time, and what we do with encouraging people of all ages, we say, you know, you're never too young or never too old to make a difference. And so that's what we want to talk about. As we just we just finished our scholarship rounds. And as we talked to these young people, it was so amazing this year because we were able, because of coronavirus, we weren't able to make the trips. We did 26 schools last year. Yeah, we took, you know, 3 days and just, you know, drove all over South Georgia. But it was so unique this year to be able to talk with them, even if only virtually, face-to-face, and talk to them and tell them a little bit about James' story. And as we talked to them, we encouraged them and said, you know, we look for people, young people who in their community, that we think will continue to make a difference. And that's what the words we leave them with, to encourage them that you can be a difference maker. You don't have to wait until you're 30, 40, 50, 60 years old to make an influence on your world. You know, and so those are the kind of the words we talk about. We talk about building a legacy, about leaving a legacy worth remembering. And that's our words of encouragement. And we tell them too, said, you know, understand you will mess up. James messed up. I mess up. You know, there are things that, you know, I've done in the last 2 or 3 weeks that I wish I wish I had a do-over. You know, we've done a lot of do-overs in our life that we wish we had. But, you know, we continue to move forward and to make, you know, the best of what we have, because we're human and we will make mistakes. We will fall down. We will stumble. But as Tammy said, you know, it's what we do afterwards, how we pick ourselves up and how we move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, you're right. COVID has thrown a lot of challenges at us, but I know I think it was on Tammy's Facebook page. Y'all had she took a picture of the computer screen. There was a Zoom call. I think it was Zoom. Regardless, there was a video chat, and there was like, I don't know how many people there were a lot of people on the computer screen. So thanks for just, you know, continuing that on, right? Regardless of what gets thrown at us in life, y'all just keep pressing on. And, you know, truly, I'll say it again, inspirational, because again, y'all's approach, your leadership style, and your motivation spans all kind of demographics and generations, right? Somebody, you know, Zoom for me might not be that big of a deal, and somebody might be like, well, there's no way Mr. Unis uses Zoom. Well, yes, there is a way Mr. Unis uses Zoom. So no, just thanks for being you, honestly. I usually do, I'm combat oriented. I usually do like what's called a 3-round burst, but I will not do a 3-round burst this time, because I think one question for you, and then I'll ask you to provide final thoughts, if you don't mind, John, is what do you talk about legacy, right? And I got this from you, is where I originally picked it up from, about living in the dash. So I tell our younger airmen a lot that, you know, that's who I'm associated with, but it could be applicable in any corporation, anywhere. It's we're in the, in just human beings, we're in the dash. We don't know how long that dash is, right? You got a birth date's on a tombstone and when we pass. So make the most of it. And so it means a lot to me. And I just want to publicly say that stuck with me, that resonates with me. Actually, everything about your life does. But what could you share with us? You know, we can't really determine what our legacy is going to be, right? I mean, we try hard and we shoot for these goals and things. But what do you hope your legacy will be? What do you hope the John Unis legacy will be when it's all said and done?
Yeah, and I hope it's one of servant leadership. As you know, we talked about quotes earlier. You know, George H.W. Bush, you know, he said there's but one use of power, and it's to serve people. And so I want to think that I've, you know, one, modeled Christ-like behavior. I want to think I've, you know, been a good husband, good father, a good officer, a good leader, you know, serve my country. You know, I read a book, one of the first books I ever bought when I was a kid, was by Gale Sayers, running back for the Chicago Bears. And it was entitled, I Am Third. And he got the quote from one of his coaches that said, you know, God is first, family and friends are second, and I am third. And I guess I tried to model that to put others before myself. And I would hope that's the legacy I leave behind, it, you know, that this time of year, I always watch the last scene of Saving Private Ryan, you know, tell me I'm a good man. It was told, you know, earn this. Yeah. And I think there are things we do want to earn, things we want to challenge ourselves to do and be the very best person we can be the very best you know, whatever endeavor we choose, you know, be it student, athlete, airman, soldier, sailor, you know, salesman, whatever it might be, just do your very, very best at it. And you know, make, when we talk about James, Tammy said the one thing about James, one mark he left, every encounter, people left James better. They left him feeling, they walked away from him feeling better about themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are tough discussions you have to have with people, but still, even with those, I hope people walk away from us feeling better.
You're absolutely right. There's a way to, you know, I had a couple of shows ago, we talked about, you know, mentorship and leadership and things like that. So, you know, there's a way to hold people accountable and do it the right way. You don't have to be a butt about it, right? When you're correcting someone in their behaviors or their actions. So, Mr. Eunice, John, thank you so much for sharing. I know there's a lot of people in Valdosta that know your story. There's a lot of people, well, across the U.S. and know your story, but there's a lot that don't. So again, it doesn't matter what stage of life you're in, you know, what season of life you're in, what chapter you're in. I know that y'all's story definitely is impactful for a lot of people and gives us, you know, you're right. We're all humans. We all make mistakes. We all slip, trip, and fall. But the way you and Tammy have carried your life through all these things, right? That's a major life crisis that we spent a lot of the time discussing. But there were other things, bookends on left and right of that, right? I mean, you discussed them on the lead end of your story, and there will be potentially future things, right? So y'all give us a good example to follow. So again, not trying to put you on a pedestal or anything, but at the same time, I'm in a different season of my life than you are in your life, and I've learned a lot from you. So I feel like going forward that I am better prepared for other seasons in life, whatever those may be, and whatever chapters I might find myself in, because I've crossed paths with a legend like you. So, thanks for being on the show. Thanks for keeping it real. I know there's times where those are difficult things to share, but thanks for doing that, because as you know, it's going to impact people. So any final thoughts before we sign off Facebook land?
No, I just, you know, getting to work with you was just an absolute pleasure. And I so appreciate your remembering me, letting me be a part of this. I've had a chance to look and read some of the articles and podcasts that you've put together here. And I think it's great. I think it's much needed, you know, as we have the model leadership. We have the model, as Dr. Schweitzer said, you know, it's not, the setting good example is not the main thing, it is the only thing. And we have to do that. You know, I have a sign above my door on the way out from Micah 6:8. He has shown you, oh man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. You know, and we try to do that, I think, every day. We try to move forward with James's story. And that drives us, you know, as Tammy and I talk to each other, I said, you know, we can't mess this up. We've got to be true to the story. We've got to do, you know, just say, honor God, remember James. And two, we wear our name.
Yeah.
You know, we want to make, you know, we talked about our two older children, you know, John and Liz, we want them to be proud of what we're doing. To leave a legacy for them and as they build their own legacy. And so, you know, I encourage each of you that anybody might be listening, look at what you're doing, build that legacy, and just remember, you're not too young or too old to make a difference in the lives of other people and the community around you.
Absolutely. Well, John, thanks again so much for entertaining us to be on the show and to share your story, a story of true resilience, right? I know I said that in the opener that we use that word too much, especially in the Air Force. I think we overuse that word, but just getting to listen to your story and getting to walk side by side with you for a little bit when we were both down there at Moody together, you're the true definition of resilience. So again, thanks for being on the show. And to the audience, to the listeners, you know the deal. Until we talk again, y'all keep it real.